You're listening to a 3CR podcast recorded in the 3CR Community Radio Studio in Melbourne, Australia. If you like what you hear, please consider donating or subscribing so we can keep bringing you more independent community content. For more information, go to 3cr.org.au.
What we're dealing with here is a total lack of respect for the law.
Tune in to Done By Law.
An informal and irreverent look at the law. Critical insights and analysis from diverse community perspectives.
Done By Law, 6 p.m. Tuesdays.
Welcome to Done By Law on 3CR 855 AM. And also welcome to those listening via various podcast platforms or via streaming on 3cr.org.au. You're with Bonnie tonight, and it's just after 6 p.m. on Tuesday, 7th of April, 2026. As always, we would like to start tonight's show by acknowledging the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation as the original and rightful custodians of the land that 3CR broadcasts from. We pay our deepest respects to elders past and present and acknowledge these lands were stolen, never ceded, always was and always will be Aboriginal land. Tonight, we welcome Sam Sourwine and Miles Brown onto the show to talk about the current changes to the National Disability Insurance Scheme, commonly referred to as the NDIS. Sam is the Associate Director and Miles the Managing Lawyer of the Economic and Social Rights Program at Victoria Legal Aid. Tonight, we will be talking to Sam and Miles about the significant reforms that have been happening to the NDIS. These reforms come off the back of concerns that the NDIS system has grown faster than expected, with it currently costing the government around $53 billion per year. There has also been an increase in reporting around fraud in the NDIS, and a recent Senate inquiry has been announced looking at integrity in NDIS systems. Whilst it's a good thing that Australian governments are prioritising spending on disability services, there is concern that many people with disability still aren't receiving the support that they need. To address these concerns, the government has introduced a suite of reforms intended to curb spending with a focus on building long-term financial sustainability. There is a concern in the disability community and amongst advocates that the government has focused too much on the reporting around fraud to justify extensive changes to the NDIS. And there is fear that these changes will only further cause harm to participants and their families. Look, I personally find the NDIS a very complicated and confusing system. So it's great to have Sam and Miles on the show tonight to help us understand more what is going on and what the impact is on people with disabilities. So welcome, Sam and Miles.
Thanks, Bonnie.
Great to be here.
Thanks, Miles and Sam. It's so great to have you on. So I just want to start by, Sam, if you wouldn't mind just telling us a little bit more about the work that your program at Legal Aid does.
Yeah, happy to. I think as our name suggests, we were set up to focus on economic and social rights. A lot of people don't necessarily understand what that means in practice, and they're really rights that have a significant impact on standard of living. So things like access to housing, social security, disability supports, and employment. The other thing that we feel really proud of and is really important is that the title of our team is really framed with reference to human rights. And that really reflects, I guess, our aspiration to positively impact on the enjoyment of those rights, particularly for disadvantaged Victorians, but also really ensure our work is framed as human rights work. It is fundamental work. And in practice, it means that we work across a range of legal areas that directly impact on people's day-to-day lives. So things like helping people to avoid eviction, access their social security entitlements, get a working with children check so they can access employment. And for the purposes of tonight, obviously, most importantly, get the NDIS supports that they need.
Amazing. That's so many important matters. And I can imagine for the listeners of the Done By Law program, lots of areas that we're really interested in. So turning then to the NDIS and to help us all, I guess, get across what is happening, I just wanted to understand. So The NDIS has been in place for over a decade, and when it was introduced, I understand it had bipartisan support and was widely celebrated as a tool that could greatly advance the rights of people with disability. I want to start with the basics. So, what is the NDIS and how is it different from the systems of disability support that were in place before?
Yeah, so I'm happy to talk to that. I was working as a lawyer in our program when the NDIS began, and it was promoted as a kind of cross-government. So it was invested in by both state and federal government as a kind of really significant economic and social reform, also a world first to put people with disability first. And it was really designed to help people with impairment or living with disability have the same level of access to typical opportunities as others enjoy around good health, lifelong learning, a place to call home, anything meaningful, employment, financial security, building relationships, social and economic participation. And also investing in outcomes for people with disability and putting them in the driving seat for meeting their needs through a system that was really around kind of entitlements to that support. And that was kind of in contrast to what I think the government heard loud and clear was of which was people's experience in the community of having, I guess it really depended on where you live. So you might have people in supported accommodation, people having to kind of depend on cobbling together supports from local councils, from schools, and nothing kind of where people could decide what support they wanted or needed to assist them to fully participate in the community. And you see those themes right through in how the NDIS works. So to kind of bit of provide a bit of context, anyone on the National Disability Insurance Scheme who has access will have a plan, and in that they have all the reasonable necessary supports that the National Disability Insurance Agency has assessed as meeting the kind of requirements under the legislation. And so our work is around supporting people who think those supports that they have in their plan don't meet the criteria under the legislation. If they don't think they meet the criteria, we assist them to appeal those decisions to the Administrative Review Tribunal, where obviously they'll have an opportunity to put their case and have the tribunal determine what supports they're entitled to under the scheme. And so it's a very different format because people on the scheme get to decide how they spend their money, what they spend their what particular where they'll get their support. So if they get a support funded in their plan, for example, a therapeutic support, they can choose who's going to be their provider, as opposed to being kind of told from their local council that they have to see a particular individual. So it's all around choice and control, but it also provides a lot more flexibility around supports interacting with each other. So, I mean, that's kind of like a kind of broad overview of how the scheme and what the kind of initial vision for the scheme was.
And I think just to jump in, I think
Yes.
really the key difference as well is that the new system really did have a focus on putting people and their needs at the center. And that was something and is still something that I think is fundamental and so important about the scheme and what it enables when it's working well, is that the person who's on the scheme is at the center of what needs they have and what supports they choose and that they need that are going to help them live the best possible life. And I think that's something, that's a real success of the scheme when it's working as it should.
So it seems like a great system. It's putting people with disability, into the driver's seat, giving them choice and control. So what is going wrong? It would be really helpful to understand, maybe from you, Miles, what are the criticisms of the scheme? And are you seeing in your practice that people with disability really are being able to take that choice and control over their own support?
I think at a fundamental level, was a kind of decision from government around, I guess, a decision to bring private enterprise into the scheme because it was a move away from government direct funding services to government providing funding sources for people to then go and choose their provider. And I think one of the kind of real pressures around ballooning costs in the scheme is around the way in which it's interacting with private providers. And what we've seen across like the course of assisting people in the scheme is things have just got a lot more expensive to deliver the same service. And it seems to be that's a lot higher than inflation. And at the same time, we're also seeing reporting around fraud. And when you drill down, what you're seeing is like a real inability that, from my perspective, and as you said in the introduction, there is a Senate inquiry into integrity in the scheme, which I think the key focus is like where is the fraud occurring? But what you're really seeing is, and it's not necessarily a fraud, it's just private providers making profit in the scheme, and that leading to higher costs. And you can pick and choose the kind of model you want to choose to deliver the services. But I think part of the criticism of the scheme is the fact that effectively it's less regulated than you would have if it was delivered directly by government. And there's always going to be things that go wrong within that kind of framework. I think that the experience we have, and going back to Sam's point, in assisting people is just how fundamentally beneficial the scheme is as it currently is. And we 100% people see people being in the driving seat around the decisions around their lives and the supports they need. And I think potentially some of the cost, if you want to call it that, is just the cost of actually giving people the dignity of actually making their own choices. And having funding in their plan to do what they need to do. Other criticism of the scheme, and probably that play out really differently for our clients, is that we see funding, like the agency making really kind of what appear to be arbitrary decisions. So a lot of the kind of because of these kind of fraud issues, we see people having their plans cut dramatically. We see changes made so that they can't actually access funding through the providers that they need to because there's higher regulation in their funding plan. So whilst big picture, there's probably these issues going on that the government is focused on, the kind of, how that plays out with our clients, and it's actually leading to appeals as well, is that there's much more kind of arbitrary control over their plan that's responsive perhaps to a bigger issue that's not relevant to that particular client, but really impacting on that client. So, I mean, I think that the scheme, because it's an innovative and new scheme, I think it's obviously right that the government would be continuing to think how does this best work for people with disability. But my real concern at the moment is that the framing is not around how is the scheme best working for people with disability, but trying to iron out funding problems with a very blunt kind of with very blunt tools, which we can talk about in a bit more detail later.
I think the other thing to add there, Bonnie, is that the concern we have in a broader sense, and which listeners might sort of have encountered in the media narratives around the NDIS generally, is that there is a question around this private model of service delivery and the fact that there are real issues around regulation of providers, but the narratives have shifted in a way similar to what we see in some ways in the social security space around the people themselves, so participants, and how they're implicated in this question of kind of cost blowouts and implications of fraud. And I think we're pretty concerned about that in the sense that there's very real questions, obviously, about regulation of providers and how you manage a kind of effectively a privatized system with private providers providing services that were previously provided by government. But certainly, our experience of supporting people in the scheme is that people are utilizing it and benefiting from it in ways that are completely genuine and necessary. And so, that conflation of those issues in a kind of media sense and maybe with the public is certainly something that we're aware of and concerned about.
It's really very important points that you raise. I'm conscious that it's We're at half time now, so we'll have a quick break with a community service announcement and then be back afterwards.
Disasters like flood, fire, and extreme heat can have a significant impact on people's lives. Community legal centres help people experiencing challenges posed by climate change and disasters to access the resources and support they need. Disasters can lead to a range of problems, such as damage to your home, poor conditions with your rental home, difficulty getting insurance, issues within families, at work, and with Centrelink payments. Community legal centres can be found across Victoria and can provide help if you've been affected by a disaster. To find a community legal centre near you, visit the Federation of Community Legal Centres website at fclc.org.au. You can also contact Disaster Legal Help Victoria on 1800 113 432 and go to its website for helpful information at disasterlegalhelp.org.au. The Federation of Community Legal Centres is a 3CR supporter.
You're listening to a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned to hear the rest of your 3CR podcast.
Welcome back to Done by Law on 3CR Community Radio with Bonnie. If you're just tuning in, we have Sam and Miles from Victoria Legal Aid with us on the show tonight, helping us to understand the current reforms in place with the NDIS. So now I want to talk about and how the government is responding. Sam, you talked about how it's looking like it's becoming a bit of a blunt tool, a blunt force response, and missing some of that nuance in what is actually happening on the ground. So I wonder if maybe Miles, you can talk us through what the changes are to the scheme at the moment.
Yeah, so most of these changes were actually introduced in late 2024, but they're being rolled out progressively across into kind of different timeframes. But we're about to kind of from June see the kind of end point in terms of where government's trying to get with the changes. So I can talk through where things are at currently and what we're expecting to see in the next couple of months. So the first thing to say is that instead of getting individual supports funded in a plan, people will get what's called a flexible funded plan. So they'll get a pool of funding that they can then spend as they like on a list of like a formal list of supports that you're allowed to spend your money on, and what's called the NDIS supports list. And there's then further constraints around how you can pick and choose from those supports, which are that they need to be related to the impairment that you have access to the scheme. And that terminology is the terminology from the legislation, which is why we use it. It's not my preferred terminology. And so a person who has a plan will now need to kind of read through the NDIS supports list and understand it. Also understand and be clear around their obligations to ensure that any supports are based on what the kind of the impairment they have access to. The government's also made it easier to raise debts against people who have made what they will term incorrect funding decisions. So what are effectively incorrect funding decisions. So The framework is very much shifting the obligation to the individual to spend their funding in a way that is it complies with the law, but the guidance, and it's a very complex environment to be making decisions in, is really not there. So there's no process by which you can call someone as far as the current understanding and say, oh, can I spend my money on this or can I spend my money on that? I am broadly supportive, and I think, and it's of this idea of increased flexibility and ability to make decisions around what you spend your money on. I think that the concern is if you're wanting to make sure you're doing that correctly, and again, this is in the context of people's experience of robo debt, You want some assurance that you're doing the right thing. And it really seems to shift even further the burden on the individual to be making those decisions correctly. And so what, I mean, obviously we would want to be seeing a lot more kind of mechanisms in place to ensure that there's clear guidance around what you can spend your money on, and further, and more importantly, that where you make a mistake, that doesn't have significant consequences for you, because these are really not straightforward decisions in the way that we're seeing the design of the scheme, and are actually, a lot of them are discretionary. So you're being asked to make a decision, but someone else might look at it and say, oh, I don't think that's right. I think you should spend that in a different way, or you weren't allowed to spend it that way. So that's kind of the first kind of major change. The second major change is around how that flexible funding amount will be decided, because it's no longer going to be based on what your kind of individual support needs are. It will be based on a, and there's been a lot of media reporting around this, and we're still getting our heads around what the actual tool looks like, but it will be based on a tool that the agency will use, and they'll have inputs around a person's kind of, again, we're not clear on the inputs, but it'll presumably be around that impairment question, where the person lives, what supports they already have in the community, and then that will determine what their flexible funding amount is. So firstly, there's a question around how those decisions are going to be made, and then secondly, what we know about the legislation is there's not going to be effective review rights around that decision around what funding is in your plan. So as the legislation is currently drafted, the only option a person would have to seek a review of that decision is to just ask for that assessment to be done again, but it would have all the same inputs, and as far as we can see, would come out with the same outcome. So that's not an effective review, right? That's just kind of going back to the agency to ask them effectively to do the same thing again. Clearly, if there's been a mistake and you've drawn attention to that mistake, then the agency may well rectify that mistake, but it's not a substantive review right in any way, and it doesn't allow the individual to kind of engage with the agency's decision-making around why the agency says they should have a certain amount of funding in their plan. And what we also know is not only will there be flexible funding, but there'll be stated funding. So for particular kind of high-cost supports, you'll need to, again, seek funding in relation to that. We still don't understand the tools that will be used to make those decisions, but what we have seen from reporting is in relation to both the flexible funding and the stated funding support is that those tools might be automated as well. So kind of in combination, it's quite a radical change to how the scheme will operate. And we can talk through in a bit more detail what our concerns about that are.
Yeah, it does seem quite radical and very concerning. So I guess let's go to that. I would love to hear what your thoughts are about these changes, and particularly I guess thinking of the people impacted, you know, people with plans, people with disability applying for NDIS. How is this going to change their experience of NDIS?
I mean, I think I'm happy to jump in first and say I think that, you know, with any changes, particularly in the context of the rationale being around budget reduction, is going to be quite alarming to people with disabilities and their families and supports for obvious reasons. So that's the first thing to say, is that any transition period and change period is going to be challenging no matter what, but particularly if that's the context. And so, I mean, from our perspective, there's a lot of potential concerns, but I think one of the main ones is because of that change and because of the ways now in which, to some degree, there's going to be more limits on things in terms of the way that people's support needs are assessed. So as Miles said, because there will be now a sort of standardized support needs assessment, and we haven't seen yet all the sort of tools that will inform that process. That could be really good, because right now it can be quite challenging for people who want to access the scheme or who are looking for supports through the scheme. Sometimes the requirements to get evidence from independent experts and medical experts is really burdensome for people. So on the one hand, there could be benefits to having a more standardized process that's less onerous in terms of evidence. If that was working effectively, but it's a big if because we haven't seen what that looks like and who's going to be actually undertaking the assessment. But the flip side of that is that the big concern we have as lawyers working in the appeals space is that the appeal rights for people, so where somebody is unhappy with the decision of the agency, so if there's been a support needs assessment done, but it doesn't reflect what you what your support needs are and what your treating practitioners are saying your support needs are. Appeal rights now are going to be much more limited under these new framework plans, and effectively will only allow people to really appeal the assessment and have it then sent back to the agency for a new assessment to be made, rather than the tribunal actually having a broader discretion to look at other evidence, so other independent evidence that could change what's in that support needs assessment. And that's critical because what's in that assessment will determine then what your budget is, so what funding is provided to you to get the supports that you need. So I think there's a, and the final part of that, which Miles touched on as well, is that we just don't know how that budget is going to be determined, and there's real concern about the use of kind of automated decision making potentially in that process around how budgets will be determined, and how much sort of human oversight there will be of that process.
And I guess,
And
yeah.
so,
Oh, sorry, you
just to
go,
jump in,
Miles.
so I think big picture, like the kind of reform we would want to see is we want to see the government actually having some effective review rights around that, and I think that that will be super critical. I think a lot of the other kind of changes are around kind of how the reforms are implemented, and we know that the agency is currently kind of working out how like all the bits and pieces around rules that will support the changes. It's the National Disability Insurance Agency. So I think it's really around making sure that people with disability are actually actively involved in those changes and making sure they work for the community. I think that's the key change, but we would really like to see those appeal rights introduced into legislation if there's any window to do that. So that's kind of a key focus.
I think we're just about end of time, but if you I'm really curious because you've raised so many really important things and for us to think about. I guess for the listeners as well, is there anything that can be done going forward?
I
I
think
think
from
it's,
our
oh, you go.
oh. I'll start and then you can jump in. I think from our perspective, it really is about making sure, you know, that people are looking to kind of communities and communities, you know, people are really organizing people with disability and their supports and organizations around making sure that the scheme is still working for people with disabilities. And I think it really is going to be a matter of collectively continuing to monitor and advocate around issues where that's not the case, and making sure we're really led by the experience of people with disabilities. I mean, we as lawyers are really only kind of seeing one part of the scheme, and it's really people with disabilities who need to be at the centre of really helping all of us understand what's working and what's not working in terms of the scheme going forward, particularly while we navigate these changes.
I think that's probably all that we have time for. You've raised so many important things for us to think about. I've certainly learned a lot, and I'm sure our listeners have too. I just want to say a really big thank you, to you both, Sam and Miles, for coming on the show, giving us a rundown on what's happening with the NDIS. You're both doing such important work at Victoria Legal Aid, supporting clients to navigate these really difficult changes, and we're very grateful for the time that you've spent chatting with us. You've been listening to Done by Law on 3CR 855 AM, streamed at 3cr.org.au and available on various podcast platforms. Done by Law will be back again next Tuesday at 6 PM. Stay tuned now for the voices of West Papua.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast. If you found it valuable, please consider donating or subscribing to support independent community radio. To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au.